Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 19th, 2010. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Scott Long's personal chauffeur, Chris Cosenza.
And I am the chauffeur, Scott Long.
Hey, buddy, hey, good to have you back. That was the first time I ever picked you up at the airport, I think.
Yeah, I like that you're my bitch now.
I am, man, I am. It's worth it. If you have to take all these trips to Tunica and let me stay home and do my job, it'll be worth picking you up once in a while.
Well, I had a great time up at in Tunica at the Horseshoe Tunica Magnolia Fall Classic presented by Ante Up.
Yes.
I like saying that.
Yeah,
it was fun.
Nice little ring to it.
Yeah, had a good time up there, and of course we'll talk more about that in the main event. But I just got to say, you know, we tried to do the show on Wednesday when I was in Tunica and had a terrible internet connection.
Shocking.
Right. And here's the funny thing about that is, had we done the show then when we wanted to, I would not have had any airport stories to share. And what I was going to say was, I had this whole bit planned where I talked about how every time that you and I fly somewhere, we meet some jackwagon that is just doing something that's just ridiculous, right?
Yep.
And on the way up there, I had 2 flights and a layover in Atlanta, quite possibly one of the worst airports in the history of the United States.
100% agree there.
And not one person annoyed me the entire time.
Oh, come on. I'm sure your wife texted you a couple of times.
No, not even her. It was the most amazing thing, and I got off the plane, and on the show when we were getting ready to tape on Wednesday, I was going to say, you know what? I know that karma is going to come back to bite me.
On
the way back, and very quickly, it did. You know, the entire time that you were driving me home, all I was doing was bitching about the flight, wasn't I?
Yeah, you weren't happy with some guy. And
people that's like blocking the aisleways, yeah. And then I didn't tell you about the 2 people that really annoyed me, but you know, I get on my last flight, and I go to claim my seat, and I'm like, all right, 26C, there's a baby sitting in it.
No.
Maybe I'm somewhere else. And then and the mom looks at me, and she picks the baby up and puts it on her lap.
Oh, no.
Did I really draw the short straw on this flight? Now, it turns out Chris's baby was adorable.
Wow.
Was awesome, didn't cry, was happy, I had fun sitting next to it. It was the lady on the other side of the aisle cramming down her pie hole a big smelly cheesecake or a cheesesteak.
Cheesesteak.
Like onions and peppers falling all over and stuff. I'm like, oh, there's got to be a federal law about that. I'm calling the TSA, FAA, FBI, whoever it is. There has to be a smelly food test that you're not allowed on the plane. So anyway, it blew all my karma.
Oh, man. But at least you landed safely.
Well, that's true.
And you didn't get, like, you know, Bloody Mary spilled all over your back and your hair.
No, I was expecting it, but it didn't happen. all right, well, you know, before we left, I was over at the Nuts Poker League, Chris.
Nuts, N-U-T-Z.
N-U-T-Z. Always like the crazy little spellings.
Yeah, the Z. The Z has taken over the S in a lot of our poker venues.
Absolutely. And, you know, we work with a lot of great poker leagues. There's a lot of good ones out there. And up in Tunica, I was talking to a guy that played at the Interstate Poker Club.
Yeah.
You know, one of the great ones up in Georgia that love us. And so there's a lot of good ones out there. Nuts is one of them. And, you know, 1 year ago, they started, they launched, and they invited me out to be a celebrity bounty at their opening tournament. And,
man, you got them fooled, don't you?
Yeah, I know. I mean, well, you know, it's a new league, so the bar for celebrity very, very low. And no chance of limboing under this bar.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
And I went out and had a great time. And so this past Saturday was their one-year anniversary. So they've been in business for a year. They're flourishing, doing very well.
Very good.
And the bar on celebrities has not raised, though, in that year, Chris. I am still the cream of the crop, much to the dismay of the great owners of the Nuts Poker League. So they invited me out again. And so Laura and I went out and... I got a couple. I had my little radar on, and I brought back a couple of tidbits for the show, Chris.
Cool, I can't wait.
All right. Well, the first one is, I you know how we're bounties in a lot of tournaments, right?
Yeah,
you know,
pretty much everything we play. Yeah.
Right, right, and you know we get invited to these poker leagues, other things, and to be honest, it's kind of a I enjoy doing it. I'm sure you enjoy doing it.
Uh-huh.
But as far as a poker player mentality, it's a pill to swallow, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tough
because you know people are gunning for you. Not only just because you know that's the nature of poker is to gun for your opponents, but now there's usually some kind of prize associated with us.
Yeah,
that
the added incentive.
Exactly, and then and beyond that, just the fact that they can brag about knocking out the celebrity, and somebody's going, "Hey, who's the celebrity?" And they're like, "I don't know, Scott, somebody or other." And so it's really tough to play good poker.
Right.
At that, pretty much, you're just kind of like playing what I like to call old lady poker. You know, you're playing passive. You're just playing the nuts and hoping things work out because you're not going to make any moves on people.
Did you call it lady poker?
Old lady.
Old lady. Okay, yeah, I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
Okay.
I'm just sitting back here and letting you get all the emails now.
Well, but no, I there's lots of really nice old ladies out there. They just
that's Scott at AnnieUpMagazine.com.
All right, how about old man poker?
Hey, that's fine.
That's fine. Yeah, we're allowed to pick on the old men, but we can't pick up the women.
No, no old ladies, but old men. That's fine.
Okay. All right. So I was playing old man poker normally,
okay.
Right?
All right.
And but I encountered a brand new phenomenon that I am copywriting. Well, TM, trademark on the end.
Okay.
It's going to be called the reverse bounty situation, Chris.
Awesome.
This particular event, every time I entered a pot or raised, people like fell over their chairs to get out of the pot. They didn't want to be anywhere near a pot that I was in.
Wow.
And I was just like running over the table, and I wasn't trying to run over the table. It's a free league, and I'm a celebrity bounty. I'm just there for fun, you know, drinking my beer. But very odd, isn't it? It's unlike our normal bounty events.
They must have prepped the players or something ahead of time and tried to tell them that you were really, really good and they should avoid playing you or something. For them to get out of your way, something's not right there.
Exactly. I mean, come on, whoever gets out of my way.
Yeah.
I mean, not even old ladies or old men. So I thought that was interesting. But then the other thing, too, is this is a little more serious, but not serious like cancer serious, but more serious than reverse bounty situation serious. And it was a good lesson for me on how you have to size up the entire environment when you sit at the poker table, regardless of whether it's a free league or the World Series Poker main event or something in between, right?
Right.
And you have to not just follow the cards and try to put people on hands and all the other kind of stuff that you normally do, but you got to follow the conversations at the table. And you kind of understand where people are coming from. So, I mean, for example, there was this guy at the table. He was in the middle of a hand, and he started talking. It's like, wow, they got a good turnout for this. And it was. It was like 120 people at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Right.
Very, very impressive. But, of course, 120 people. And they're doing like 30-minute levels or something. This thing was going to like shut down the restaurant.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of these people weren't counting on that. They're like, hey, we'll play some poker. We'll, you know, the normal 7 or 11 game, and we'll be out by 10, and, you know, we'll be home watching Matlock, or, you know, we'll be at the nightclub getting our groove on or something like that. But no, you get there and you find out you're going to be there all night. And this guy did not want to be there all night, right? So that obviously affects his play.
Yeah, you know what you're doing? You're grokking the table, as our good columnist Stephen Bloomfield
grokking.
Would say.
Ah, yes, I love that term.
That's what you were doing. You were grokking. You're absorbing all of the aspects of the table at once, and you took it upon yourself to understand this guy did not want to be there.
Right. And, you know, I mean, this comes up often in our hands of the week, right? Because most of the time people try to give us the complete story, but it's almost impossible to. And sometimes, you know, we just, you know, we don't even share all the details that they do send us.
Right.
And then we go to the forum. It's like, oh, how can you make that move? And here's kind of the reason is because when you're actually there in the moment, if you're a good player, you're soaking up all the extra stuff that's going on. And sometimes that's going to make you make a move that sounds, on paper, not optimal. Correct?
Yeah, that's a good assessment. I would agree with that.
Now, of course, what I like best about this story is that I destroyed this guy's knight. You know, he's one of these, all right, I get out of here. I'm in. I'm all in. So we got a hand where I had eight tray offsuit and the big blind. Flop came 9-9, 8. Something like that.
Yeah.
Or no, it's 9-8-8. How's that?
9-8-8. Wow, and you got 8 tray.
Yep. And then the turn was a 9, and we got it all in. And wouldn't you believe it? This guy had pocket nines. Two big chip leaders at the table. He left me with 1 chip, and I'm sure I left him with a lot of great moogly grumbling on his breath, because now he had 30,000 chips he had to dump off because he had quads.
Oh, my God. So he actually didn't knock you out there, right? Because you had 1 chip left.
That was the final part of this trilogy of Poker League wisdom that I'm throwing out today. He did not get the bounty.
Oh, no.
He took 13,000 chips from me, left me 200 units.
Oh, my God.
Did not get the bounty. Immediately, the table broke. I moved to the other table with all these very nice old ladies. See, I was going to come back. And I didn't even look at my cards. Went in blind. Lady flopped a boat.
Oh, my God.
Took me out. And then, hey, last little round of the clothes. Hey, Scott, we got a bounty. And the woman, you know, people put her on their shoulders and ticker tape parade. And she gets the secret prize that was associated with knocking me out. And all she did was just happen to have the right hand at the right time when I moved to her table. And this poor schmuck who wanted to go home is now stuck the rest of the night trying to get rid of 30,000 chips and doesn't get a prize for it. I love it.
Isn't that always the way when you don't want to win a free roll or something, you end up getting like the big stack and knocking people out left and right. And when you really want to win, they suck out on you when they have 1 out. You know, it's just a way. It's a beautiful game.
It is beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Well, I was glad that you got to go to that. You know, it's always nice to be able to help out, especially the guys around here, you know, who helped us out in the beginning. So it's cool that you got to go. I wish I could have gone. But since you've been talking for 20 minutes, I guess I'll do the feedback.
Excellent.
I'm sure our listeners are tired of your voice by now. So
they're always tired of my voice.
Plus, I didn't want you to try to annihilate this guy's last name. So this comes from Ivan Nizgaki.
Yeah, I'm sure you hit that one out of the park.
We'll see. He just wanted to come to the defense of the much maligned phrase, "I'll put you all in." As someone who uses this from time to time, I thought I would explain why I use it. The usual argument against using this phrase is that it's not up to me to put someone all in or not, you know, the opponent. They decide whether to call, thereby putting themselves all in or fold. I get that. I don't say this hoping my opponent will think they must by rule call. I may not even want to call. I use this phrase because of its intimidation value on some opponents. I could just say I'm all in, but when I tell an opponent I'm putting them all in, I am implying that they will be all in if they call, while I will not be. I am calling attention to the fact that I have more chips than they do. This tends to put them on the defensive, which is exactly where I want them. The phrase "I'll tap you," as seen in Rounders and other black and white poker films, would have the same effect. The problem is that half the time people have no idea what I mean, and it sounds vaguely sexual. Thank you very much for that, Ivan. So anyway, he says, thanks for putting out the most entertaining poker cast on the internet, and he looks forward to it every week. Now, Scott, I'll take this because I responded to him.
I responded first.
I know you did.
But we said the same thing.
Well, yeah, so we said the same thing.
But the poor Ivan's going to feel like we're kicking him when he's down here. But go ahead.
Well, you know, you and I didn't really put the phrase down, and I don't think it's maligned in the poker world. What it is it's not an actual bet made on your part, and some poker rooms will frown upon this and say it's not a legitimate made bet, and that if someone else does go all in, you could actually fold if they happen to show their cards or whatever, and you can say, hey, I didn't go all in. You know, I just put him all in. I didn't say I was all in. And then there's this huge argument, and then it can literally be like an angle shoot that get you banned from the room. And so that was what I had said to him, is that you really don't want to use that phrase without actually putting yourself all in, because you're just asking for trouble. That was what I said to him.
Yeah, yeah. I said very much the same thing, and I'm like really the problem is it's not a legal bet. It depends – not even on the rooms, I don't think. I mean, I would hope that any room, if somebody calls the floor on, you come over, they're going to say, sir, what is your bet?
Yep.
And make you say all in or an amount. That's the thing. And our poor friend Ivan didn't realize that, and he was very appreciative that we both told him
that's cool.
About that. And that's what – and of course, I went on to say, hey, I'm not trying to offend you, but it's a Deutsche Bank thing to do, I think. Hope you're not offended.
Yeah, I didn't say that to him.
And, you know, to his credit, he said, no, it takes a lot more to offend me. So I'm working on that right now. I'm trying to figure out what I could do now to truly offend him. But, you know, from my point of view, what I like to do is exactly the opposite of what he's trying to do. He is trying to intimidate me. So when people try to do that to me, I try to let them know that I want to get under their skin as well, too.
Yeah.
Well, so, that's why I would say, you know, I would sit there forever and just stare and then be like, sir, it's on you. I'm like, no, it's not. The action is on the gentleman over there. And they're, I put you all in. I'm like, okay, if you think so, I'm just going to wait here till you give a legal bet. And that, generally speaking, and I'm not picking on Ivan. Ivan's probably the exception to this rule. That would probably get the type of people that say, I put you all in on tilt.
Yeah, that would be so cool, too.
I have one now. I've turned the tables on you, Ivan.
It would be even better, too, if you had the absolute nuts and you just slow rolling with it, too. You're like, no, sir, you didn't make a bet yet. You get the floor to come over, and then he finally admits that he's going all in, and then you think about it for a while, and then you call the all in and show him the absolute straight flush or something. That would be, like, the greatest moment. I would rather do that than win a bracelet.
Oh, man. See, exactly. That's it. So, I mean, that's kind of what you get. And I'll say this in general. I'm not picking on Ivan or anybody else. But when you try to be intimidating at the table, as long as you can handle people calling you on that intimidation, then that's fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, but generally speaking, those people can't handle it. And that's where I think it's a lot of fun. And I also told him that I thought Vaguely Sexual sounds like a good name for a punk band, doesn't it? I scored tickets to Vaguely Sexual tonight. It's going to be the awesomest show ever.
Oh, God. Yeah, your email is a little more descriptive than mine, a little more detailed. I tend to just get right to the point and move on to the next thing I got to do that day. But you love to be creative and, you know. But, hey, it was such a good letter, and it got such a good response from us that it's actually going to be our mailbag this week, right?
That's correct. And if you guys want future mailbags for us to call you Deutsche Bank son, email them to podcast@anyupmagazine.com. And Ivan, for sending it in and being such a good sport, we are going to send you a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware. It sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys at PMSPokerware.com. And I think this week's suggestion would be, no, sir, you cannot put me all in. That's what's going to be on the shirt, I think. That would be awesome, wouldn't it?
Oh, man.
Or just floor in five, you know, five letters, you know, in like 200 point type.
Or, you know, no, sir, you may not tap me. Oh, my God, that's just so nasty.
Oh, man, oh, man. I'm having a lot of fun with those PMS Poker Bear shirts. I hope we're up and that comes through with some of them. All right, well, a couple other housekeeping real quick. Do you want to do the apes thing here? Tell us, folks, what's going on with apes, Chris?
Well, the apes heads roll, heads up free roll. Heads roll.
Heads will roll.
Heads
That's
will roll. Heads have rolled, which is why the free roll is now working. The heads up free roll has been deployed with the new password, AnyUp Heads Up, all one word. Once again, that's AnyUp Heads Up. And it's going to be 16 seats, too, not 10. So don't forget that. They're going to be giving away. And you know what else, too, Scott? We are not letting anybody else know about the password. Just
that's
the show. We're loyal to our PokerCast listeners. It's our little gift to you. If you guys are listening to the show, you're the only ones who know. The password for the free roll is AnyUp Heads Up.
Yeah, that's bad. Just for the Heads Up one, not for the normal ones, which are AnyUp 2010. And, you know, because we get that all the time. People are like, hey, why don't you just change the password every week and put it on the podcast? And we have to remind them, you know, hey, the AnyUp universe is bigger than the podcast.
That's right.
But for this particular free roll, we're shrinking it down. The NDF Universe is just the fine folks that download our show off iTunes.
Yeah, absolutely. And our next event is Saturday, November 27th at noon Eastern Time, and it's Horse Baby.
Yes.
Giddy up. And the free roll for that is going to be this Saturday, the 20th at noon. You and I, well, I can't make it. Are you going to be able to make it? You're going to be out on a ship, right, or something?
Well, you know, I just realized that I actually don't sail out till Sunday, so I kind of inadvertently fibbed to our good friend Dr. Frank. So I might try to steal over there and get to the game, but I have a feeling I need to pack. Because, you know, it's a two-day cruise,
yeah.
And those things are harder to pack for than seven-day cruises, right?
No.
Oh, I read that somewhere in the book or somewhere like this. So I'll let you know after I pack for it.
All right. Well, to me, it's wear the clothes I got on and bring one outfit to wear off. That's about it. I don't know what the hell you're thinking about.
Oh, man. All right. One more piece of housekeeping. We just want to remind everybody that NEOP has a Facebook page, Chris.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty good, too. You're pretty good on there from what I hear, because I don't have a Facebook account, so.
Try to be creative, but yeah. go to Facebook, like you know everybody does that anyhow, and just search for NEOP Magazine and click like us. You need to like us, and you know, there was some kind of like Facebook defriending thing going on this week, and I don't think NEOP lost too many friends, Chris.
That's good because you know we're friendly to them; they should be friendly to us.
That's right. We still got more than 1,000 fans on there, and of course, you know, we've got. 30, 40 times that listen to our podcast or read our magazine. So a lot of you are not keeping up on this thing and need to get to Facebook and friend us.
Yeah, befriend us, man. We work hard for your dedication so and your devotion. So, but you added something pretty funny this week. I got the email myself, but
So if it's not good enough to be our friend on Facebook, here's a reason to go. Our good friend Fred Rice, NEOP National multiple banana winner. He had sent us a photo, Chris. He was driving around probably aimlessly because that's probably the only reason you'd be driving around in Maryville, Illinois. I'm sure it's a wonderful little burg, but doesn't appear on most state maps. And he got to an intersection where the road was N Donk Avenue.
Which means there's an S Donk Avenue somewhere, yeah. Too.
He sent us a photo for that, too, but I thought the N Donk was probably the better, yeah. Right? I don't know why. Why did I think that?
I don't know.
Donk, maybe it would just be better if it's Donk Avenue. But you'll see the picture of the road sign there. A lot of good comments on there. Sounds like a bunch of people want to hire the neighborhood Hoogalins. to steal the sign.
I'll tell you what, too, it's a nice neighborhood. You can tell by the stop sign and the street signs. You know, they're like carved wood or something. I mean, they're not like regular just aluminum flapping in the wind signs. These are like nice signs on this Donk Avenue. I really would. If I got that sign, I would like hang it in my house somewhere. It's that nice.
And invite your friends over, including the local police officers, and go, hey, yeah. Nice soul.
Put a nice little spotlight on it, like in a gallery. It'll look nice. It'll be pretty sweet.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, you've been gone, but the news continues. Let's see what happened on our NEOP news desk.
The World Poker Tour has announced it's beginning a regional tournament series in the United States, beginning with an event in Florida and another one in Europe with a kickoff event in Paris. The regional tours will offer reduced buy-in events, but winners will not earn Player of the Year points. So
yeah, that's kind of confusing like me. Yeah, it kind of confusing.
WPT with training wheels.
It's making me nervous, too, because one day I get this email from the WPT, and it's like, we're coming to Seminole Hard Rock Hollywood in November. And I'm like, no, it's like March, April, yeah. Or whatever. You guys are scaring me. And then I realize it's one of their events that they normally were holding there that we already publicized. But
right.
I made sure I republicized it again just in case, you know. I don't want anybody getting mad at us. But, yeah, it's pretty exciting that they're doing that. It's smart. It's kind of like the circuit events.
Yeah, kind of following the circuit events.
Yeah,
right?
So. Poker After Dark has filmed a Pot Limit Omaha show with players including Brian Hastings, Tom Durdwan, Phil Galfond, and Phil Ivey. No doubt this was a product of the wonderful Poker Vision column I wrote a few months back in our magazine saying, you need to have a Pot Limit Omaha show out there, and here's why. And I'm sure that, you know, Maury was listening, right?
He probably was, absolutely. When you type, Chris, people listen.
That's right. People pay attention, baby. You know, I saw Phil Galfond out at the World Series this time when I was out there for the November 9, and I was going to say something to him, but I couldn't get past saying, oh, my God, Clay Aiken. And I was really afraid that I was going to say that when I walked up to him, so I just said, no, I'm not going to actually ask him for his contact information. It's too difficult. My tongue couldn't do what I wanted it to do, so I just walked away from him.
See, I'd go by, oh my God, Ruben Studdard.
Ruben Studdard. Oh, man. So anyway, he won't be appearing in the magazine anytime soon. Or on the show.
But yeah, I'm excited to see something other than Element Hole. I might actually even tune into that. I might break my TV ban.
Wow.
Because they're doing something other than boring, crappy little No Limit Hold'em.
Crappy NLHE.
All right, then finally, Peter Eastgate, the 2009 World Series Poker Main Event Champion, is selling his championship bracelet, Chris, on eBay.
Man.
And will donate the proceeds to UNICEF. Last I checked, I heard it was like somewhere just south of 17 grand that the bid was going for.
Why not just donate 17 grand to UNICEF and keep the damn bracelet? What's the point? And who wants to own that bracelet, really? Well, they're not going to really think you're the world champion. What's the point of this?
Yeah, there's a good little discussion going on our forum at andyupmagazine.com/forum, and that was one of the points is, you know, hey, winning a bracelet is immensely important to me if I win it. Buying your bracelet has real no value to me. I mean, are you going to put it in the little curio cabinet in the living room, and
yeah,
your friends are going to come over, and you're like, yeah, that's my World Series bracelet. Well, I didn't know you played. No, I didn't. It's just I'm a rich douchebag.
No, Deutsche Bank.
Oh, sorry. Been out of practice.
Yeah, I totally agree, though. I don't get it. I don't get the whole... I mean, you know, it's a great thing that he's doing, but why not? You made $1 billion already. Just donate the money yourself and keep the bracelet. Good God.
Well, you know, I guess in his defense, because, you know, that's my job, is to always look at things from both sides, right, and then get vilified on the forum for it. You know, there obviously somebody's bid on this already, right?
Yeah.
So there is value to it. There's somebody out there that wants this thing, even if I don't want it, you don't want it, and anybody in our forum doesn't want it. So, you know, if he doesn't want it and it's going to bring joy to someone else, and then that joy is going to be reciprocated back to Peter in the form of money that's going to be sent to UNICEF and help a lot of kids so I don't have to give them a cup of coffee a day, then, you know, what's the big deal, I guess?
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, it's just he has so much money, and he's in a lifestyle that generates so much money. Why do that? Why not just donate the money yourself instead of trying to sell a bracelet to make one person happy? Yeah, it's just weird. I don't know. It's just weird to me. It's taboo. I'm not happy with it.
It's taboo.
All right. Our hotline is 813-448-1120. You call it. We use it. We give you something cool. This one comes from Donnie.
Well, hi. My name's Donnie. You were talking about verbal plays last time I heard the show, and I had one that I thought was a pretty good play. My cousin had pocket kings, and he was in position on a guy, and the guy was jet calling him all the way to the river. Well, the river was an ace, and the guy starts stacking up all his chips to go all in, and my cousin said, uh-oh, looks like I'm going home early. And the guy just stops. He stops dead in his tracks, and he grabbed a handful of chips off the top of his stack. I think it was $30, and he bets that. And really, before my cousin could even say call, it was almost like his cards were in the muck before my cousin got his chips out onto the table. But I thought that was a pretty ingenious method of seeing exactly where he was with that ace. But anyway, I thought that might fit into that category fairly well. And y'all have a good day. I really enjoy the show. So thank you much.
So you asked for it, Chris, and you got him.
Yes, I love it. It's so cool. I mean, you really really have to know what you're saying at the table, and think about all like you do. Think about all the angles around it. What could possibly come from me saying this? You know, and I'm glad somebody sent one in, because that's true. I mean, it's something that you can't control, you know, because you don't know how they're going to react to what you say. I just keep your mouth shut.
And I got to say this, too. Never in the history of poker, Chris. And yes, Trip, I told the wife, hey, I'm sorry. I know it's our anniversary. I can't go. I got to research the entire history of poker for a bit for the show. A little upset, but she'll get back. She'll get over it. You know, I'm sure she'll move the furniture back in at some point, too. But never in the history of poker, Chris, has anybody who ever said, well, I guess it's time for me to be going home anyhow, putting a bet in, not had the absolute best monster hand possible at the time. Really?
Yeah, no, there's no way somebody wants to go home and, like, put in douche tray with you know, all Broadway cards on the board. I mean, it's just not happening.
Yeah, in your little book, I think, you know, that's going to be like the number one verbal tell. That, you know, never in the history.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's getting late. I bet I as well go home anyhow. I'm all in.
So well, it's
if you're
going to
go home, all right, great. I'll send you home. Call. Ha, ha, ha.
But it's perfect, though. If you actually say that and you don't have any cards, you can steal the pot.
Yeah, yeah. It's better yeah, if you do. Like, you stand up and you get your backpack on. If you're Mac Medicine, get your little fanny pack on and collect yourself, put your coat, and start walking away. And then, hey, sir, come back here. You got a straight flush. Oh, really? I had a straight flush? I didn't know. I must have missed that.
Oh, man. Donnie, thanks for calling in, though. We appreciate it. We're going to give you something really cool. Scott, I'm going to let you tell him because for some reason you love doing the promotional thing.
I don't know why I love it. I'm just falling into this, I guess. But Donnie, yes, we appreciate you calling the hotline at 813-448-1120. And we are going to send you a deck of those beautiful J-Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Anti-Up.
Well, last week in the ride-along, we came up against a really loose player, made a call, found out we were behind, but sucked out and made it straight and doubled up.
Gotta like that.
You gotta like that. So now we're at the 2,000, 4,000, 500 level. We have 150,000 chips, and apparently we have a tight image. And after winning a hand with ace-ace and another with king-king, which cracked aces, we find ourselves in early position and raise to Scott Long's dubious 9999.
I love it.
With the 10 of hearts and the 10 of spades, and it folds around to the small blind, who now shoves for 85K.
Wow. That's a lot of Ks.
That's a lot of Ks. Is this a good spot to call, Scott, or should we fold?
Okay, this is what I was thinking. You know, a tight image works two different ways, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
If you're tight, some folks are going to respect your raises. So when you can raise with crap, and they will fold, right?
Right.
Other people are going to try to take advantage of that by when you make a raise over shoving because they know you're tight. And even though you probably have a good hand, you're probably scared now, and you're going to fold. So from my point of view, it's hard to say which opponent we're up against here with what Colombo has shared with us. But you know me. I'm tighter than the jeans on that Mexican football sideline reporter who doesn't understand why people say she dresses inappropriately. And I'm going to enjoy my newfound riches here for just a little bit longer and wait for a better spot. You know, I could be ahead here, but you know what? Is it worth giving half of my chips away? When I've got a lot of chips as it is and probably in the top right now, I'm folding here.
Yeah. I don't think I could have said it any better than that. I mean, that's a pretty big shove. And, you know, sometimes it just means a small pair or a bluff. But even so, it's just not worth it. Fold away. You know, get a better spot. Be in position. I mean, obviously you're in position here, but not when it's a shove. There's nothing you can do about it after that. So just give it up and fold. I think he's going to fold. What do you think?
I would think probably.
Yeah, because, you know, he can't just suck out again. I mean, Colombo doesn't always suck out, so hey, he sucked out at least twice already in this tournament. So,
but if he does, it's going to be an exciting end of the rider on. Because now he's going to have a massive chip, so he's probably just going to bleed him for the next, like, six ride-alongs, right?
Absolutely. Okay, let's see what he does.
Welcome back. You know, I see a lot of tournament players make this call here. And you have to take those calls in context. Oftentimes, it's because everybody's dealing with M's between 10 and 20. I'm not in that boat right now. I got a ton of chips, and I have an uber-tight image because the only thing I've shown at this table, seemingly, is aces and kings. There's no way I'm calling this. Unless this guy's a total moron, I'm behind. And the 10s are going to be a race at a best. I'll just let it go. I'm not into it for that much, and I'm still sitting on a huge stack. So we have a weird run of cards where we're folding a lot here and falling behind a little bit because of the blinds and annies. And then sure enough, we snap off another naked ace re-raise shover with a king-king. Again, tight image, and yet chips are still coming our way. The best place to be in. Now we're going to fast forward to the 2,500, 5,000 level, and I'm sitting on 220K in chips. We ante our 600. I post my big blind of 5K. And I get a middle position raiser for 22,900. And I look at ace of spades, queen of spades, in the big blind. I'll admit right now, my least favorite hand out of position deep stacked is ace-queen suited. And yet, here I am with the exact hand.
How do you want to play this?
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
So, Chris.
Yeah?
I went to Tunica, you went to Las Vegas.
Yeah. Stark contrasts.
I was telling everybody in Tunica that, and they're like, and even the people who live in Tunica and work there are like, man. You got the wrong side of that coin, didn't you? And I'm like, no, I did not. I'm a little tired of Vegas. It's as much fun as it would be to be out there for the World Series, hanging on the Penn and Teller like the Muppet guys. I was very excited to go to Tunica, and I would have chosen that over Vegas had we actually flipped a coin for it. Of course, when I got off the plane and I shriveled up with the massive sub-freezing 50-degree temperatures there, I rethought that a little bit, but otherwise, I had a great trip up there. I went up again for the Horseshoe Tunica Magnolia Fall Classic, presented by NEUP. And you know, they do this thing twice a year. And you know, Dale, the tournament director up there, great guy.
Yes, Hall of Famer.
Yep, he's in the Senior Hall of Fame,
Senior
right?
Senior Hall of Fame. That's correct.
And just a great guy. I mean, we talked a lot, obviously, this trip. But last night, while I was waiting for my cash game table, he had me in stitches on the ground just talking about his past. And, you know, he used to sell, like, tractors and roadside assistance plans for big, huge tractors and all kinds of crazy stuff. He had, like, a horse magazine where people would send him pictures of their horses.
Oh, man.
He did all those, and then, of course, he went out and, you know, did great in poker, and now he's hanging out at Tunica. So, great guy. He really wanted us to be a part of this tournament and, you know, kind of shepherded the whole presented by NEUP part of it, and was a great host. He and Lisa Crompton, the other, the actual poker room manager. Great, great people. Take real good care of you in Mississippi. And, Chris, you know, I love it. I say this every time, but it bears repeating because it's so important. The people in Mississippi are nice.
I know. It's ridiculous how nice they are.
Oh, my gosh, is it so nice. And, you know, I don't want to leave. You know, everybody's smiling. They're happy to see you. And they don't even know. They don't know who you are. Hey, good luck today. Have fun.
Yep.
Love it.
Incredible.
Love it.
People in Vegas, not so much.
A little different. But, no, hey, not everybody can be from New York City, you know.
No.
But the nicety started when I first got to the hotel, and I got the little hotel supervisor actually working the front desk and got me hooked up, Chris, and then gave me, all right, Mr. Long, you're in 2181. The elevator's right there. And I'm like, thank you very much. And so I was walking to the elevator. I was like, 2181, score. I got a high-up room, man.
Yeah.
Now, you know, when we go on these trips, we don't spend a lot of time in the room. But, you know, every once in a while, I just like to be on the top floor so that I can open the drapes in the morning and just kind of gaze out. Particularly, like, in Tunica, I can feel like one of those big, you know, southern plantation owners. You know, looking out over my crops. You know, the little music from, like, Fletch Lives playing. And maybe see the little Cosenza flock of deer running through the field.
And the trees. And the trees. Look at the trees.
Oh, you got to see the trees. The trees are amazing there. So I was excited, right? So I get in the elevator, and of course, you know, the little guard there, hey, good luck. Have fun. Well, thank you. I love being in Mississippi. Get in the elevator. I go to push 21, Chris, and no 21. There's no 21. And I'm like, wait a minute. Maybe it's on the other side of the elevator. You know, maybe there's so many floors at this hotel that they have to break up the numbers on the two sides. So look on the other side, no 21. So I'm like, wow, 2181. Can I really be on the second floor? All right. So I push 2, get off at 2, get off of the elevator, and immediately I'm met with you know, those little directional signs?
Yeah.
Rooms 21, 16 to 23, 47 to the right. Rooms 2400 to 2700 to the left. Rooms 4068 straight up. This doesn't even make any sense. I feel like, you know, I need to be like Dick Cage, a national treasure. Like, Riley, can you tap into the traffic cam and figure out where the hell I am? So, you know, I started walking and walking and walking and walking. And I'm like, oh, what the heck is my room? So I stop and I'm like, sit down in a nice big chair. Catch my breath. Hoping that one of those, you know, old guys that drives a little car to Disneyland was going to show up and give me the rest of the way. You know, keep walking. I see some lady there. She's been there. You know, she's like a, like, you know, McGovern 72 sticker on. No, don't worry about me, honey. Save yourself. Keep walking. And then, you know, there's like all these crazy turns. You know, I'm following all the road signs. And then I bump into like this tribe from Survivor with their little buffs as blindfolds. And they're in the middle of a challenge. And it took me an hour to get to my room, Chris.
So you were indeed on the second floor?
I was on the second floor. It just happened to be the longest second floor in the history of hotel second floor ever.
Oh, man. There goes the whole Southern Plantation fantasy, too.
Wow, yeah. So I knew it was a long walk and that I wasn't really making too much of this up, because when I got to the room, out of breath, there was a one of the little maids, or cleaning ladies, housekeepers, whatever you want to call them, and she said, "Whew, son, this room's pretty far away, isn't it?"
Oh, man.
And I'm sure she had like some service elevator like right outside my room. But no, I had to go through the normal people elevator.
She's just sticking it to you.
But, you know, that's good, because when you go to these casinos, Chris, we go to the buffets all the time.
All the time.
So I needed to work off a little excess weightage there. So
I think next time you go, it's going to be called the Annie Up Buffet. That's how many times we've eaten at that buffet.
Oh, but, you know, I make fun of the long walk, but as soon as I walked in the room, gorgeous rooms, Chris.
Really?
Yeah, the horseshoe does it well. You know, like little granite counter, marble in the bathroom, nice huge bed with all those little fancy accoutrements that, you know, the women like, but the guys just like, you know, shove off the bed because, you know, you don't get big flat screen TV and a wet bar. And for this particular event, Chris, the poker room rate, $49 a night.
That's really sweet.
You know, I've paid more than $100 for a rat-infested Days Inn in New Orleans before.
Yep.
And I could have got this for $49.
That's awesome.
So, you know, I'll give a little plug there for the Horseshoe Tunica, you know, when you go there for a tournament. Definitely check out the room. Just be sure you're not on the second floor.
Or bring your scooter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, push Doyle off and grab his or something. Yeah.
But how was the event, the actual event? You got to play in a couple of things too, right?
Yeah, the Magnolia Classic. I really had a good time. It was a nice little fun tournament. It was it's still going on. It's going through the 21st. I don't know how many different events they had, but it's like twice a day. They had a their every day were like $260 buy-in. The night events were like $160. The daytime events, 40-minute levels, and you started with 10 grand in units. So you got a lot of play in the daytime one. And at night, you still got 10 grand and 30-minute levels. So, you know, you got a good play in both of them,
yeah.
Really,
yeah.
For your money. As far as these tournament series go, you know, that's a good buy-in, too. And then, you know, they have the requisite little special events. They have, like, you know, the seniors event for 40 and older, which, you know, we laughed about on the show. But people out there were laughing, too. Some of the people that were, like, 48 were like, oh, I'm so excited. I'm playing the seniors event tomorrow. And, you know, in a ladies' event. And then, of course, that great Bad Hat White Tiger Cash Blast tournament, which
right.
is for the main event. And I would have loved to play that. But, of course, I'm back here now. But so they did a job setting it all up. And then on top of that, Chris, the daytime tournaments, they threw in a seat to the upcoming World Series circuit event that's going to be across the city in Harris Tunica next month. Or, I'm sorry, January. They just threw that on top of the prize pool.
Yeah, they paid after themselves. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, so that's like a $1,600 seat, and they just added that on. So, you know, good value for a tournament like this.
It's pretty incredible.
And, you know, the turnout was good. I mean, here's one of the interesting things, I think, because when I get there, I did make the rounds of all the poker rooms, the five poker rooms there, and talked to all the managers. And, you know, and even the guys at the Magnolia, Dale was like, you know, hey, you know, we're trying to do two events a year, but, man, the tournament calendar's getting crowded. And, you know, he's really right. I didn't think about this, even though, you know, we know a poker magazine and we run results every month and know how many there are. But, I mean, just look in the Mississippi market here, Chris. The IP down in Biloxi just finished their World Series circuit event. Just finished up, like, literally last week.
Right. It was, like, finishing on the tail. The tail end of this one was starting, so they were, like, almost overlapping. That's how close
almost it was. Overlapping, right. And then so then we had this one for 6 or 7 days, right?
Yep.
And December, Gold Strike is going to do their first ever December event. It's, like, the 2nd through the 12th, so that's coming up. And then in January, you got the WPT Southern Championships down the Beau Rivage. That starts, like, right after New Year and runs all the way through the end of the month. And then overlapping at the end of the month and into February is the WSOP circuit over at Harrah's in Tunica.
Yep, that's pretty incredible.
It's a massive glomming of tournaments going on there. And, you know, one of the managers told me, he's like, you know what, two of them actually told me, you know, I think there's too many tournaments now.
Could be. We'll see at the end of the cycle, but yeah, they're probably right.
But, you know, the points they were making, and, you know, I'm not trying to be an amazing Kreskin here or not, but, you know, on the show a couple months ago and in the magazine, I was talking about, you know, when the Pennsylvania rooms open up, the Delaware rooms, the Florida changing. I mean, is it too much of a good thing now?
Yeah.
Are we diluting everything? And the tournament thing is the same thing, I think. And one of the managers was like, you know what? I miss when my event used to be a must come. And not just because he had an ego that he wanted the event, but. There's no must-go-to tournaments anymore, Chris.
Yeah, because there's so much to... If you miss one, there's another one right around the corner.
Yeah, and what this manager said is, you know, there's so many poker rooms opening now, and tournaments... there's a tournament in somebody's backyard almost all the time, so why are they going to, you know, get in the car and drive 8 hours or fly somewhere when, you know, there's a tournament right next to them? And it's true. I mean, really, the only special one out there is the World Series.
Right.
Everything else, you know, you can, I'll go if I can or not. And it's kind of unfortunate in a way. I mean, progress is good. I mean, we like not having to travel, but I thought that was an interesting point that came up.
Well, that's another reason why Dale is so creative with his events, using the Bad Hat White Tiger, the adding the free seat to the circuit to the day events. And, you know, he's being creative because you're going to have to. You're going to have a reason to go to these events. Other than just playing, because let's face it, all the events that he spread were no limit hold'em, so that's not really not enough reason to go, unless you have other things that you could get from it. And there you go, a senior event being 40 years old. You know, I could have played that event, which would have been pretty wild. You know, and the cast blast, and so there are other things, and I think other people are going to have to follow suit really to get people to show up.
Now the one thing, the one little negative to it, and they admit this too, and they're kind of hamstrung, is they just really don't have a lot of space there to run an event like this. I mean, you've been there. The poker room itself is gorgeous.
Right.
They do a really good job there, and really how they set it up is nice. You know, the desk where you sign in is kind of set back from the opening, so people aren't like crowded outside the room trying to get in, and then the cashier is the same way. There's a lot of room in the room, but. You know, when you have to add tables, they have to put them like right outside the room.
Yep, yep.
And you're right near the slot machines and smoking, and the lighting's not great. And it's unfortunate. Now, you know, I talked to Lisa, the manager, and she's really making a big push to get it moved to Bluesville, which is their big bar there in the Horseshoe Tunica.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I didn't get a chance to walk in and see it, but she said it's awesome. It'd be great for a tournament. They got like, you know, a stage where you could put like the feature, the main. Final table or something on there, and a lot of room, and what they're fighting, unfortunately, and we see this in a lot of jurisdictions, is that Bluesville is not actually on water; it's on land.
Oh no way!
And all their conference centers up on my floor, second floor, are also the same way. So they really don't have any space that's on water to hold this event. And trying to navigate the whole Mississippi Gaming Commission and try to convince them that. You know, you can have this event on land and handle all the money on the water and stuff. It's just been kind of a pain. But they're going to try, and, you know, if they can pull that off, then it's going to be a really, really great event, I think.
Yeah.
It's really it, good as it is now. But
it just shows awesome. You how foolish, too, the laws really is. I mean, all because it's connected to the bill. You know, it's just so foolish. It's so ridiculous. How can people not just see that and common sense prevail? It just drives you crazy.
Yeah, it does. But, you know, hey, I wish them luck, and I'm sure we'll have a lot of results in our January, not our next one, because it's still going on. But
right.
Should be fun. And, you know, of course, I played two of the tournaments. Played the night event the first night I got there. Finished 13th, Chris.
Well, I can only be impressed with that if you tell me the size of the field. Could have been 20 people in this thing. I don't know.
Yeah, 14. no, I think there ended up being like 75 or something in there.
Oh, that's
so
not too
bad. I was four out of the money. They paid the top nine. And, you know, we have a great new columnist up there, Chris.
Yep.
I know you love her, and I finally got to meet her and spent a lot of time with her, Jennifer Gay. Does great work for us, and she was out there, and phenomenal player herself, Chris.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that she's good.
She was at my table for most of that night event, and then ended up finishing fourth in that one. Came back the second night, played the other night tournament, and when I went to bed, she was still alive with six left.
Wow.
So for all I know, she might have won that thing last night.
Wow.
But a great player and a great columnist, so it was fun with that. But she was cracking at me, Chris. She was calling me the short stack ninja.
Well, you have so much experience being the short stack, so.
And that's what I had to tell her. I'm like, obviously you don't listen to the podcast. You should. You know, I spend most of my tournaments with a short stack, so I've got it all figured out. And but I was having a lot of fun there pushing all in, and I wasn't even calling. I wasn't even having to get lucky. I was just pushing all in. But it didn't work out for me. But, you know, before I got there, Chris, went to the bank, as usual, because that's what everybody does except for you.
No, I don't do that.
Go to a poker trip. And Rose, my favorite little teller at Regents, Scott, good luck! And gave me a little envelope. And I'm like, thanks, Rose! And I was driving away, went to put it in my wallet. She gave me all 50.
Oh, no.
Now, we all know about the curse of the 50, right?
Yeah.
You know, gamblers never touch it. And so I'm like, all right, I'm going to test it here. I'm not going to spin around, go back to the drive-thru. It's like, Rose, come on. You know it. I need hundreds, babe.
Babe.
So I'm like, all right, I'm going to see how it works out. So I got there first night, sat down, played, got in a little 4-8 Omaha with a half kill, won $130.
Yay.
It's like, all right, screw you, 50s. I'm taking you down.
And you never win, so that's awesome.
Absolutely. Rest of the trip, terrible. And just to prove how vicious the curse of the 50 is, Chris, when I woke up this morning, got dressed, went down to leave, I looked at my wallet, all I had left, one $50 bill. So now I still got 50 left in my wallet.
Ugh.
I got to find a way to get rid of it. It's like, you know, it's like that B.O. episode on Seinfeld.
That was on last night. That was on last night.
Exactly, and it's the same thing. You can't get rid of this curse. So
surprised we didn't get into a car accident on the way home with that 50 in the car, man. Next time, let me know you got a 50, because I may not give you the ride.
Oh, trust me, man. Believe the curse of the 50. It exists.
You know, Jennifer Harmon believes that it's you don't want to be paid in 50s, but you can have them and pay for stuff with them. I don't know. I remember hearing about it that way. She didn't want to get paid in 50s, but she didn't mind having them and paying them with them, or something like that. So I don't know. I don't know the whole deal with her. Maybe it's just her, but I heard that before, too.
Wow. All right. Well, Chris, I know you're famous of collecting dollars for bad beat stories, right?
Yes.
Now, I've got a pretty interesting one, and I know nothing exists like that, right? but I'm willing to pay you 50 cents for this story, because it's not my bad beat story, so I should get a discount. I'm relaying it from the gentleman who actually probably doesn't even listen to the show.
Okay.
And knows about this. But this was pretty extraordinary. This gentleman got it all in on a flop with pocket aces after making a nice raise pre-flop, right?
Yeah.
Guy thinks about it. All right, I call, flips over ace something, but the ace was of the diamond. Boom, diamond comes. Guy with pocket aces loses a big pot, right?
Yeah.
Very next hand, he gets it all in pre-flop with pocket jacks. Flop came with a jack and two Broadway cars. Flops is set right. The guy who was all in against ace rag, ace six. And you know what's going to happen here?
Yep.
Broadway, two hands. This guy went from a massive stack out. Both times with the best hand, and the second time with the best flop. Or actually, both times, I guess, the best flop. Second time, the monster flop.
Sounds a lot like that charity tournament I played in Tampa.
Brutal.
Oh,
absolutely brutal. It's one of those things where I almost felt like, sir, please, here, take my stack.
Here's my 50.
Yeah.
You deserve this $50 bill.
Oh, man. All right. Well, you know, we always had we always meet these characters when we're traveling, right, Chris?
Yeah.
And the first funny thing I thought was the very first night I got there, I was cashing out from my one lone winning session. And this guy comes up to me, and I recognized him. And I'm like, hey, I remember. He's like, wow, do you really, Scott? I wondered. And it turned out, you know, when you and I went up to Tunica last time, the last day we went over to Harrah's Tunica and played some cash the last day before our bus took us to the airport, right?
Right.
And at my table, I befriended this nice gentleman named Dale and had a great conversation with him. And Dale was there, and he's like, hey, Scott, saw you playing Omaha. Didn't want to bug you. And I'm like, dude, trust me. You wouldn't have bugged me when I'm playing Omaha. You would have saved me some money. And I had a nice chat. And then the next night, in the tournament, final table, of course, where he always is, your friend Luther, who you were playing with in the No Limit game.
Yes, Luther.
The same day. Remember the guy who looks like Confucius?
Yeah, he's awesome.
He's a great guy.
He's
and,
a great player, too.
Final table made a lot of money, so he's still doing very well up there. But it's great, you know. I know Tunica's not this huge metropolis, so, I mean, the chances of seeing people that we've seen before happened. But I thought that was nice.
Yeah, it's cool, and he remembered us, too, so that's pretty cool.
Unfortunately, those were the nice characters I met. All right, so let's start at the buffet, which, as you mentioned, is the Skylong Buffet, because we've eaten there so many times.
Right.
That they don't even charge me. I just walk in and I'm like, hey, Scott, how you doing? I'm like, thanks. All right, so the first night, I get in late. Obviously, I'm hungry. Dale says, hey, go to the buffet, get something to eat. I'm like, all right, thanks. Walk in. They have a lot of these, like, single tables, I call them, really for two people. But that's where they put all of us folks that have nobody there.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, like, highlight us like zoo animals.
Yeah.
These are all the losers that don't have any friends, right? So they see me at it. And I'm facing one way. And then the woman at the table next to me, Chris, is facing the opposite way. So she's kind of like looking at me, but we're a ways away. So we're kind of like those rich people, like the Pewter Schmidts on the Family Guy, you know. They have those big, long dining tables, and they sit on either end and have little bells that ring for Jeeves to bring them the food.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously I'm not going to be social, so I got my face down. I'm cleaning plates like, you know, I'm known to do at the buffet. And then I look up. And this is when I notice her, and she has not one, not two, not three, but six plates of half-eaten food stacked like the World Trade Center. And she's working on her seventh, Chris.
No way.
And so I'm looking at her, and I'm like, we all know the rule of the buffet, take all you want, but eat all you take, right?
Well, I don't know about that, but that's the Army, Scott. That's the Army. Take as much as you want, but you finish what you take. The buffet, if you don't like it, you're not going to finish it.
All right, okay. Well, here's the thing. The unspoken corollary, obviously, is that if you don't like what you take, no one's going to come by and put a gun to your head and make you force it down your gullet, right?
Right, right.
All right, so, but here's where I found a little odd. And when you go to the buffet, you're not going to know whether you don't like it until you actually take it back to the table, right?
Right.
You know, you're not going to be like Cousin Eddie and sticking your finger and go, yeah, give me more of the yellow. So I understand this, all right? So I'll give you a mulligan. You know, you come back and, you know what? I don't really like this, all right? I'm even, because I'm a nice guy, it's Tunica, and everybody there is very friendly, I'm going to give this woman two mulligans. Comes back with a second plate of food. Yeah, I didn't like that either, all right? Chris, if that's you, your third trip to the buffet and all subsequent trips to the buffet line, I would think something would go off in your head that would say, you know what? I'm not sure this buffet is meeting my high culinary expectations. And therefore, rather than load up my plate with stuff that I have a high probability of not liking, I would just take a little dollop. Just a little dollop. And I'll walk back to the table and try it. And if I like it, it's not going anywhere. I can walk back up and load up then. But if I don't like it, then I'm not wasting the food for those poor kids in Ethiopia.
How big is a dollop of fried chicken?
Oh, that, well, you know, you can get a wing.
Dollop of fried chicken, please.
But seriously, that was so sick.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And I'm not one of these greenies that runs around, you know, trying to save the world. But, you know, come on.
What a waste.
Just because you paid $18 doesn't mean you should just take stuff and throw it away.
Yeah, that's right? A waste. That's a waste.
All right, well, let's get back to the poker table because, you know, I know people get tired of me talking about non-poker. A couple characters there. The first lady I'm going to say, I'm going to call her Nice Hand Lady, Chris.
Okay.
All right, now...
Much better than Old Lady.
Yeah, you know, I know I'm kind of like, you know, Andy Rooney-ish again here. And this woman is very, very nice, so I'm not picking on her. She's just peculiar, all right?
Okay.
So the very first night I was playing Omaha, and she's a regular and a phenomenal player. She did very well at the Omaha. She made two final tables in the tournament, too. So very good player on top of this. Just very friendly, all right?
Yeah.
So every time the hand was finished, it didn't matter who was in it, who won, she would go, "Nice hand." With a smile. And then, ace tray, ace high flush. Nice hand.
So she'd repeat what the hand was?
Exactly, exactly. Now, here's the thing. I think we all can agree that when you say nice hand, no one ever means it, right? It's usually your passive-aggressive way of saying, yeah, thanks. Thanks for calling my 4X raise with 7 deuce offsuit, you Deutsche Bank, and getting lucky with runner-runner 7 deuce to crack my aces. Nice hand, right?
Pretty much, yeah. That's pretty much how it goes.
Or the opposite is, it's congratulating you on a hand that a monkey who's getting a lobotomy performed on him at the table could not have played any worse or better than you have. You know, you're in the big blind, you wrap the table, you flop quads. And you take everybody's money. Nice hand. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of skill involved in that hand. I cultivated everything I've learned from Super System to really maximize the value of that hand. Thanks. Nice hand. Nice hand.
Oh, man.
All right. But then beyond that, though, it's calling out the hands again. Yeah. 31, lock low. Ace high flush. You know, just in case people didn't know. And after the pots have been pushed, you know, and the cards are shuffled and no one can, like, you know. But, you know, very nice lady. But the other guy, not so nice, Chris. This guy I'm really picking on. I was going to call him Mr. Moneybags, but, you know, Mr. Moneybags, I don't think there's not enough tood in Mr. Moneybags.
Okay.
That could just be any rich guy, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
So I'm going to call him Richie Rich. And not that Richie Rich is a bad guy. The kid's great. Comes from privilege. You know, he seems to carry himself well, right? But Richie Rich, I think when you call someone that, you're throwing a little toot his way, right? So I'm sitting at the Omaha table, of course, like I am all the time. And this gentleman comes down. He's standing over the table when he takes a seat. He's kind of one of these chiseled guys. Hangs out at the gym all the time. He's got one of those little crazy Edward Hardy shirts on. I would say that he has his baseball cap on backwards, but I really don't need to say that, right? You know it.
No, I knew that was coming.
And he's still standing. He's not sitting. He's like, "Hey, what's the table minimum?" And of course, you know, it's not a question you get off in a limited. Surveyor's debating. Oh, I think it's $40. Like, oh, okay. What's the table maximum? And the owner's like, "You know, it's a limited game, sir. There's no maximum." Oh, okay. Give me 500. And one of the guys at the table was like, "You know, sir, I don't think you're going to need 500. That's probably too much." And without missing a beat, the same guy said, "Or maybe you do need 500. So while he's doing this, this guy grabs this big wad of cash out of one pocket, right? He's got like a couple ones and fives falling on the ground he doesn't care about. And he's got a big hundreds wrapped around a rubber band. And it peels off 500s, throws them on the table like he's at the strip club,
yeah.
Throwing them on the stage. So the guy gets his chips, right? And he sits down. Immediately he sits down, he pops right back up. And he's like, "You know what? I need more chips. give me 1,500 more."
More?
And he's like, "I've got two wads in my pocket." And now, of course, I'm biting my tongue. It's bleeding, laughing at what this guy just said. But he's still standing, and he takes off the little rubber band around his wad, and he's like, "Purple, that's my favorite color."
He said that?
Yeah.
What the hell does that mean?
And, you know, he's fumbling to get 1,500 off. So another floor comes over, and it's a sweet southern lady there, but tough, right?
Yeah.
Comes over, and she's like, "What do you need, sir?" And he's like, "I need 1,500 chips." And she's like, she could tell it's a 4.8 Omaha cable, and we're all giggling our asses off. How would you like them, sir? "I'll take them however the F you want to give them to me."
Oh, man.
this woman swings around. What did you say? And he's like, and he cowers. I'll take them however you'd like to give them to me, ma'am. She swipes the 1500 off the table and stomps away. Comes back, brings them all black with a couple greens, you know, just to make them happy.
Yeah.
All right. Now, everything I've told you about this guy, Chris, what are you expecting is going to happen when he actually starts playing?
I would think that he is going to suck.
He's going to suck, but he's also going to be like this guy that we talked about on the show a couple weeks ago, right?
The guy who never folds?
Yeah. And while I'm thinking about this, he's like, I need more chips.
Oh, no way.
Give me another 1,000. So a third floor comes up. All right, so now this guy has 3,000 on the table in a 4-8 half-kill Omaha game. Normally, you're buying in for a stack and a rack, 200. This guy has 3,000. I'm like, all right, this guy is just going to be crazy. He's going to be raising every hand, and boom. And turns out I was wrong. He's never bad. Put in a voluntary bet.
Wow.
He checked all the way down.
So he just didn't know what he was doing, and he just wanted to be a big shot.
I guess. So, you know, I'm thinking, just looking at the wad of money, I'm like, he must have just won the tournament, came over here, couldn't get into his 1-3 new game or whatever. Go over, talk to one on the floor. He's like, no, he's just drunk.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man.
That's crazy. Hilarious.
But it wasn't at this table, but a couple good lines that came out, and one that applies to this. The one guy was like, I don't mind. Oh, I can't even remember now. Oh, it was so good. I'll come back to it. I heard one of the other great lines I've always heard at poker table. My new favorite comment, sir, you're a bad poker player, but you're a good person. The guy was walking away from the tournament. See, you don't even get that in Mississippi.
That's just wrong, though. No, it's still wrong no matter where you are.
And the other line was, I don't mind you going broke, sir. I just mind you taking me with you.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, those are the gems you only get at the Omaha table.
But it was a good trip overall, right?
Yeah, I had a good time. Happy to be back here in Tampa, though. But they're going to do another one in the spring, probably April or May. So look for that. And then, of course, as we mentioned, there's lots of tournaments everywhere. So.
Yes.
But definitely the folks up in Tunica, all the rooms up there treat you very well. And five great poker rooms. And a real short drive from Memphis. I flew into Memphis this time. And he drove across the Elvis Presley Boulevard on the way to the airport today,
wow.
Chris.
Wow.
Didn't see Graceland. But, you know, it's a good place to go. It's a fun little trip to Tunica. So people should probably take advantage of it. And if you happen to be up there for Magnolia Classic, all the better.
This is Joe Navarro, and you're listening to the best poker cast in all the universe, Ante Up, the absolute best on poker.
All right, here's the thing, Chris. I've been talking to our friend Lee Childs.
Yeah.
A really good player, right? And actually does the hand of the week correctly on the show. And we're going to try to get back on the show here pretty soon. But not today. And we know Lee is a a unidimensional player. Just plays the no limit hold'em, the CNLHE. So I'm going to burn off an Omaha hand today. So we don't have to embarrass him with that. And plus, I was actually playing Omaha, so I feel a little sharper here. And I know it's your favorite game. So
is Omaha 8?
I don't believe so.
So it's
Omaha PLO.
Okay, PLO. I don't mind that as much as Omaha 8, so I'll do my best.
All right. Comes from our new friend, Ron. He doesn't say where he's from.
He's from Omaha.
There we go. Ron from Omaha. Playing the Omaha. I like it. All right, so he says he's a low-limit Omaha player, and he wants some feedback on this. It is a nickel-dime Omaha game on Stars.
Okay.
And he had brought $8 to the table and had run it up to 1036.
Of course he did.
Hey, last week we had somebody that lost some,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know. That balances it out.
All right, so this particular hand, it folds all around to the cutoff, which he says is a surprise for this level of the game, which I probably agree. You know, a 5-cent dime, you don't get a lot of folding going on there.
Right.
But folds around to the cutoff. Cutoff limps, and the cutoff has 750 behind, so we have him covered.
Okay.
We are on the button with five of diamonds, three of diamonds, seven of spades, ten of spades.
Huh. Okay. I gotta be honest here. I wouldn't even play this hand. I mean, I know I'm in position, but I don't have blockers or anything here. You know, if I had like an ace of spades, maybe, not just because it was a nut flush draw, even if it was a lone spade or something like that, ace of hearts or whatever, I might consider playing it because I'm in position and it's a blocker. But, wow, what do I expect to make here? I'm probably just letting it go. I know you didn't, but yeah, obviously.
We absolutely agree on this. I don't see a big upside in this hand at all. You know, you know. Now, he mentions he's double suited, which is great, except it's not double suited to nuts or anything close to the nuts.
Yep.
Unless, of course, I mean, you get a straight flush. Both of these could be straight flushes, but you're asking for a lot for that.
Yeah.
And he has a 5 and a 10, which is kind of interesting because you need a 5 or a 10 for straight, and you've got both. So that means it's a little less likely that other people could have straights. And Omaha is a game of straights, usually. But that, I'm putting lipstick on the pig here, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is the hand that, if you're going to learn anything from the hand of the week this week, it's to fold this hand.
Yeah.
And then we'll try to correct it as we go along.
All right, 35 cents in the pot, and our hero, of course, wants to see a flop. Makes the call, and then the small blind pots it to 50. 50 cents.
Oh, man.
He has 10-24 behind, so a little bit less than we do. And the big blind calls the pot. He has 640, so we have him covered. The cutoff calls, and it's back to us.
Oh, man. So we're getting, like, I don't know, almost 4-1 on our money to call. Probably 4-1. No, almost 4-1. I don't want to play the hand. I know I'm in position, but, oh, my God, I'm going to have to flop the world and hope it holds up. So I'm still folding.
Yeah, here's really the lesson in Omaha. It's not so much the first call being bad just for that call, which we already said is bad. It's the fact that you get sucked into these hands now.
Yes.
And can't get away from them. And Darwin forbid that we actually get a piece of this flop because then we're just going to get sucked into it more. Yeah. That's the real problem with Omaha, is because people look at these cards and go, hey, I've got all these outs and stuff, and, you know, hey, I'll take a flyer, maybe I'll hit a big. And the problem is you don't hit a big. You hit it not so big. And then you get sucked in. Or you have this situation call where everybody, you have a big raise and everybody calls, and then you start doing pot odds and you're like, I can't fold, right?
And the other thing too is, I don't know if you recognize this or not, but when you're playing micro pot limits, they don't seem to know anything but betting pot.
That's true too.
So it constantly costs you a ton of money to see the next street. So you better have a good hand going in, because you're going to have to bet the pot or call the pot pretty much every street. You know, there's no massaging of the pot in small ball when you play micro stakes pot limit Omaha.
Very good
point. Yeah, just be prepared to lose a lot of money.
All right, well, we make the 40-cent call into the pot of 160, and we see a flop of 6 of clubs, 8 of diamonds, ace of diamonds.
Yeah.
So now we're open-ended. We got a diamond draw.
Yeah.
And this is what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, this is exactly what sucks you in and spits you out.
Starting to get a little excited about this hand, even though we shouldn't. And the small blind opens for $1.90.
Oh, man.
Which, obviously, I don't know how really you could do that since the pot was 160.
Yeah, the pot was 160. How do you do that?
All right, well, let's say he bets pot.
All right.
We'll do a little revisionist history here. Bets pot. The big blind calls the cutoff calls.
Oh, we're gone, man. We are gone. It's not even.
You see how tempting it is now, right?
Oh, my God. But still, though, I mean, you got the diamonds out there that if they hit, your diamond draw is probably not good. And, you know, if you make it straight, it might
be a 5 high. That's a great flush, isn't it, Chris?
It's one of the lowest flushes possible. I don't know. I don't see calling here being a good play. You know, maybe you're thinking outside the box and you shove pot, you know, but, you know, that's just crazy, too. I would never have gotten involved in this hand, so I'm not calling. I'm folding. I just don't like it, because even if the card comes that I need, it could be a diamond and I could be screwed.
Yeah, I have a tough time really figuring out my outs in this hand. I really don't think you can count the diamonds. No. The straight might be, but then you got to fade a diamond on the river.
And you have to fade a diamond of your straight, too. You don't have the full straight outs.
Exactly. So, I mean, you've got limited outs there, and obviously you got no pairs or anything going on here that are going to help. So you've got a limited outs here, I think. So,
and the calls tell you that your diamonds aren't good, right? One of those has to have diamonds.
Absolutely. And it might even – your straight may not necessarily not be good, but you could be playing for a split.
Split, yeah.
You know, there could be somebody else out there with 5-7.
Yeah.
All right, well, here's his thought process, Chris. He says he thinks the small blind has aces, that he sure is playing them that way. It's hard to dissuade you from that.
Right.
Made a pot bet preflop and bet the pot with an ace high. That makes sense. Our hero thinks his flush and straights are good, so he has 18 outs. And it's probably the favorite to win if the board does not pair. And he says even if he does have aces, if they're suited at all, they're probably not my suit. So I'm inclined to feel good about my flush against them, but he's not sure about the other two.
Well, obviously the ace can't be the ace of diamonds in the guy's hand, so that doesn't even make sense. But I'm just saying. So I just don't see all three of these guys. One of them has the flush draw that's bigger than our five. So you can't say you have 18 outs here. You just can't think that way. You have to think that you need to have a 9 or a 4 to win, and it can't be a diamond. And hope it's not a club, because then it gives somebody another draw in the end. I just don't see us having – I don't see it as 18 outs at all. I see it as maybe 6 outs. And with 6 outs twice, you're not getting the right odds to call there. I'm folding.
Well, and I'm not picking on my friend Ron here. Obviously, he sent it in for some help. But I think the real flaw in his thinking here is the other two opponents I'm not so sure about.
Yeah.
You can't be sure about them, but you got to take some time to think about them. This is not a hand between you and the original raiser.
Yeah, right.
You've got two other people in there. And exactly, without missing a beat, Chris, you were right. When you've got two calls on this, what are people calling with?
Yeah, it's not like a set of eights and a set of sixes.
Right, so they're calling with draws. And what draws are out there? Well, it happens to be diamonds,
yep.
Which we have, and we got crappy diamonds.
Yep.
C diamonds.
CD.
So, one, the chance of the diamonds actually hitting because of that are weak.
Yep.
And two, it's probably a good thing because we don't want them to hit. And then if we're wrong, the only other draw out there is the same straight draw that we have. So you're going to put all this money in on a split pot possibility?
Yeah.
To me, the real thinking of this hand is not the first guy. It's the other two guys.
And also, too, someone could have 7-9 in their hand, which is even a higher straight draw.
A higher straight. Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know? So 10 comes, all you have is a pair of 10s, and he's got a better straight than you. And so you could be drawing dead, almost.
Crazy how Omaha is. This is why it's a great game.
Yeah, it's crazy.
this is why you hate it.
It's so hard.
So I guess here's my thing. If you're thinking about staying in this hand, and I'm strongly encouraging you not to, I think your best bet is try to isolate and get heads up with this original guy. Because
yes.
I think you're right. You kind of know what this guy has. You're way behind him, but there's less of a chance that he has the same draws that you have, that these other guys have, right?
Yeah, I'm just afraid of if the guy does have three aces and you open up the betting again, he's going to shove on you. And then you put your whole stack in there,
that's
right?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, if you're going to play this, I think you've got to bet pot here. Know that you're going to get it all in.
Okay.
And that you're going to be – and hope that you can get these other two guys out. And then hope that you actually hit your hand, which we already said might be hard to do. And then hope again that the board doesn't pair and you lose it all. That's a lot of hoping.
That's just a horrible approach to this hand. You know, let's just bet all of our money hoping to get up against someone that we know we're behind and hope doesn't hit against us and we still hit. Oh, man, it's just a horrible laundry list of crap that has to happen. Oh, man.
That was my dramatic way of proving why this is such a really bad spot to be in, isn't it?
Yeah, we need to fold.
And if we just call here, I mean, it doesn't do any good. I mean, we don't lose as much money, obviously, right now. But obviously, this pot is going to get bigger. If we think this guy has aces, you think he's just going to check on the next street?
Yeah, there's no way.
Even if the diamond comes? No, there's going to be betting either way
on
this next card. So your money's getting in one way or the other. If your money's going to get in, I'd rather just get it in now, but I'd rather just save it because, you know, I'm kind of hungry. I want to go to McDonald's later.
Oh, so what does he do? I don't think he actually told us what he did you?
All right. Well, he says option one, fold. He's not crazy about that option. I like my odds. All right. Well,
no.
Yeah.
Kind of just kind of,
option two, call, not having made a hand yet. This might be a good option. Well, no, we just said why not. Raise, if my draws are good, I may be the favorite, correct? Again, only if you're heads up with this guy, and maybe not even then. So he elects to call, Chris.
Oh. You know, I don't like any option that puts more money in this pot, so...
Yeah, it's hard to say whether this is worse than the raising. Obviously, option one is the best way to go here. But we'll see how the hand plays out. The turn is the King of Hearts. So our board now is six of clubs, eight of diamonds, ace of diamonds, King of Hearts. Doesn't help us. No. And our hero says he doesn't think it helps anyone else either. Which could be true.
Yeah, that could be true. It doesn't make a difference, though.
Right, it doesn't help us.
It doesn't help us, so that's what matters, because we're already behind. We don't need them improving or not improving. We need to improve, so, again.
And we continue to now analyze. Let me shock you here, Chris.
Okay.
The small blind goes all in for 796.
Yeah, no.
Who saw that coming?
Yeah, when he got all those calls, he said, all right, I got to stop the draws. The King of Hearts is perfect for me. I'm shoving, and that's exactly what happens. This guy's got to have, like, ace-king, ace-ace, something like that.
I think ace-ace is just screaming ace-ace. But if not, whatever he has, he's got crushed. That bet, of course, gets the other two opponents out. Now it's on to us for 796.
With one card to come, and we're probably not even drawn live for at least half the pot. Not half the pot, you know what I mean, for a split.
Right.
So I'm folding. That's way too much money to try to call to hit a miracle on the river. There's no way you're ahead. You don't even have a pair. You can't even hit the Broadway draw. You don't have a Broadway draw. So you still have to hit your... 4 or 9 that is not a diamond. At least your hope's not a diamond. And maybe a diamond's good here now. But it's not an impossible call.
It's kind of the twisted part of Omaha here is that these other guys got out, which is what I was talking about on the flop.
Yeah.
And now you probably have picked up some odds because these people are out. Yet, they probably folded some of those outs. Remember, is what we were saying. So even though they're not in to beat you, they've taken cards away from the table that will help you. So you can't – it's getting hard to count your odds. And that's exactly what our hero is doing here. The pot's $17.94, and he can win all but 38 cents of it. He figured his odds are 17.56 to 7.96 or 2.2 to 1.
Yeah.
And he figured 16 outs.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't agree with the 16 outs. So if you can't count the outs, you can't count the outs. You know what I mean? If they're not part of the equation, you can't use them. I think he has six outs. Maybe the diamonds are good, but you don't know. This guy could have had ace, ace, king, queen, and king, queen of diamonds. You know, I just can't count the diamonds as my outs here. And with one card to come, how's the pot 17? What was the bet before? $1.60, right?
Let's see. The last time we hit the pot was,
$4.624, and then...
Four callers for 190, so that's math's off again.
All right, anyway, we are for calling 7 to win about 15. We are getting more than 2 to 1 on our money. If all those outs were actually indeed good, it's a good call. But you can't be sure that they are, so you have to count them as like half outs or not even outs. So I still don't think we're getting the right price to call. Then I'm folding.
All right, and then the last little piece of nugget of information he gives us, Chris, is this call would be 10% of his bankroll.
That doesn't – you know what? You play in poke, you bought in, that's your money. You're not thinking about your bankroll. Right now, they're your tools. Those are your tools of the trade to fly your trade, whatever, your craft, and you're playing at that moment. The money that's in the pot and the money that's in front of you, that's what you're playing with. You've committed to that 10%, and you're using it whether you – I can't fold because it's part of my bankroll. I mean, that I'm playing with that. That's what it is. You're in a tournament. You know, if you're in a tournament, you're playing. The chips are in front of you. You're not saying, well, you know, I paid $55 for this. No. You're playing to play. If you're going to make the call because it's statistically correct and you have a feeling or, you know, your gut or you think you're ahead. But don't fold because it's 10% of your bankroll. That's just not right.
All right. Well, that was a very reasoned argument. And I agree with it all. But where I think it comes into play is if I'm just messing around in the micro limits, I'm normally maybe a 2-4 online Omaha player. It's now that it becomes a little less horrible to make this call.
Right.
Still horrible, but a little less horrible because, you know, you get lucky, you just chip up, and you could afford it. Not saying you should, not justifying it, but, you know, but when you say it's 10% of your bankroll, this is some serious money for you now.
Yeah.
And when you're playing for serious money, you shouldn't be making these borderline calls, I don't think.
Well, the other thing, too, is if, I don't know, if your entire bankroll is $70, maybe you shouldn't be playing online anyway. You know, I don't know.
I mean, if you're playing at the nickel dime level, I mean, I guess you could drop down to the penny two penny, right?
Right, but you're playing PLO. So you're buying in for $10. You're buying in for essentially one. Yeah, I know you bought in for $7, but you're buying in for 10% of your whole online bankroll. That's right. A lot.
Right.
If you know what I mean, if that's your entire bankroll in the whole world, that's crazy. I wouldn't be risking $10 or $7 of my $70. You know, it just doesn't seem right. Even though it's still micro limits, it seems like you should be playing limit poker, you know, or 1-2 limit or something. I don't know. It just seems like to me, pot limit, you can bet your whole stack and basically in one street, and that's a lot of your bankroll. That's your entire. See, my online roll is never my entire bankroll. It would never possibly be my. So that to me, that's real dangerous, and I wouldn't play online if that's all I had was $70.
Very good point.
I just wouldn't. But you know, whatever. That's crazy. Yeah, I'm folding. I was folding pre-flop, so.
Now you just all the more reason to fold, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, our hero makes the call. The river is the deuce of diamonds.
Hey.
Our final board is. Where's our board at?
Six of clubs, eight of diamonds,
ace of diamonds, king of hearts, deuce of diamonds. We complete our flush. Small blind turns over. Ace of clubs, ace of hearts, king of diamonds.
Don't wait, no way.
Five of hearts.
Oh, if you said the queen of diamonds, I was going to just freaking pass out. You're going to have to drive to my house and edit the show, because I can't believe you. If he had king of diamonds, queen of diamonds, that would have been incredible. Oh,
so
man.
We take down a monster pot of 24-27, our bankroll balloons. And our hero wants to know whether we, obviously it's great results, but whether he played it okay or was just fortunate.
Well, you know what? A broken clock is correct twice a day. And I think that this is a broken clock here. I don't think that this was played correctly. I think that pre-flop, he shouldn't have even played it. I think after it got potted and then called two other spots, he probably should have folded. Then when that flop came, he should have reasoned that he was behind, and that even if he did hit his card at that point. Let's look at it this way, and I know you like to look at the other things, go back. Let's just say that the two of diamonds came on the turn, and then someone goes all in. Would he have called then? If not, then he was playing the hand wrong, because he was playing it thinking he had 18 outs to win the hand after the flop.
Right.
Now, the two of diamonds came on the turn rather than the river. He was fortunate that it was a blank on the turn, because then he got his opponent to get everyone else out to give him a chance to win.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like that a lot. You see that a lot where guys go all in the turn, another guy folds reluctantly, the other guy calls, and then the guy who got forced out would have won the hand had he been in and gets all bitchy. Same thing here. If the two of diamonds came on the turn, would he have called that $7 bet? And if he would have, he would have lost. And that's the thing. I'm fairly certain someone had queen jack of diamonds or something like that, right?
Absolutely. I would have bet my entire bankroll.
Yep. So
at least 10% of it on the fact that we got lucky by the just our positioning at the table.
Yeah, yeah. So by that thinking, I don't think it was played properly. I think, and I'm not saying properly is always the right way, but statistically and for your bankroll, considering how much you have, you should have just let that hand go, and definitely let it go after the flop.
All right, well, we've beaten up on Ron enough, but I think the small blinds hand, it has a couple lessons in there too. Not that that he or she played it incorrectly, but this is kind of the problem. You know, when people are new to Omaha, you get excited with all the card combinations, as we've seen.
Yeah.
But then you get the pocket aces, and you think the pocket aces are great, which they're good. I mean, they're not a bad hand, but they're not the same caliber hand as they are in Hold'em, right?
Right.
And then when you flop a set, we always talk about this in Omaha. If you flop a set, you want to flop the top set. I mean, I had a hand in Tunica where I had the second set, another guy had third set, and another guy had top set.
Yeah,
it just happens.
Yeah.
So this guy, you know, had pocket aces. hit the flop, and he made that preflop raise to try to drive people out. Didn't work. Hit his hand, bet pot, did all he could. And then he gets to the turn, and now he's all kinds of odds there. And all you got left is the bet at all. And you still got to fade yet another card.
Here's the other thing, though. The key card in his hand, to be honest, is the King of Diamonds.
Yes, that was going to be my next point.
It was. Okay, well, I'm just saying that he has the blocker. He has the nut draw in his hand, regardless of having another diamond. So to know the fact that you can't call my all-in because you aren't drawing to the nuts, he's assuming that you're a better player than you are at this moment. And in his eyes, you made a huge mistake by calling with three of diamonds, five of diamonds. And he knows that he has the nuts. And because he has the nuts in his hand, you can't call his all-in. So he thought he made the right move. And ultimately, that's sometimes what happens when players overvalue their hands. He could have easily had the five of diamonds instead of the five of hearts. And he'd have been screwed.
Yeah. And, really, I'm not picking on the small blind at all. I mean, this is just the peril of not having the redraws in this game either.
Right.
And but in his defense, as you said, he has the blocker, which is great. And I think he was probably smart enough, I hope, to know that he had a lot of players that had diamonds.
Yeah.
So he was probably happy that he got at least two of them out. And he was probably happy, exactly what we said, that it was probably unlikely that the other guy was going to hit a diamond because so many diamonds were probably off the table.
Yeah.
And then boom. So, I mean, this is really one of those hands. This is definitely a great moogly boogly for the guy. I would have loved to have seen these other two hands that were folded to see there's at least four other diamonds.
I
would think that were out. And it's not a one-outer or two-outer that hit, but it's pretty darn close.
Yeah, like you said, a lot of things had to align here for this hand to go Ron's way, and he was very fortunate. And I wouldn't chalk this up to thinking that your 18 outs were good and that you did precise evaluation of the hand. Your analysis probably was a little skewed, and you got lucky. And you're going to get even more lucky now because Scott's going to give you something.
Well, you know, it's great. He's playing at these low-limit games. That's where you need to learn.
That's where you learn, absolutely.
As often, we're not picking on him. He uses this as a learning lesson. And I think we're going to give you a piece of swag that's really going to help you, too. It is a free download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games, including Omaha. And that comes from element26.net, element26.net. Check it out there. It's very reasonably priced. And Ron's going to get it for free. And plug that some of your hand histories in there and see what it comes up with on PLO. You're going to become a really good player pretty soon, I think.
Master, should I bring the car around? Where are we going this evening?
I need the Great Poupon, too, please.
Well, good to have you back, buddy. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We will see you at the tables.
AnnieUp is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.